Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome to the Cullen Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies' profile. Now, the Cullen Economics Report.
Everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, along with Chad Markwitz. We are your hosts for the weekend's edition, also your hosts throughout the week, as I always mention, on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, search the KE Report. That's where you can get all of our daily editorials focused on market moves, as well as company updates. Really just trying to give all of you, our listeners, the best outlook and the best information we can on these markets that have continued to be pretty tough this year. To kick off this show, we're going to talk a bit more macro concepts with Mark Chandler, and then we're going to move over into some more of the resource investing that I know you all want to hear, more specifically maybe even some of the stocks. But again, something to consider is that all stocks do seem to be broadly correcting this year. Mark, let's kick off this segment with a key story from this week, and that was the Bank of England stepping in to their bond market to at least control or put a little control in that yield environment. This did cause some very short-term volatility. However, the market seemed to have reversed pretty quickly after that initial volatility. This all is also carrying over to people assuming that other central banks are going to start doing, who knows, similar things in their bond market. And it all ties into that whole concept of QE. Are central banks getting into QE by issuing or creating more money to put into the markets wherever they see fit? Mark, your takeaway from the Bank of England intervening in their bond market this week.
Yeah, thanks, Corey. I think that you're right that the Bank of England development, or really the UK developments, are what this week will be remembered by most. Began off at the end of last week, really, when the new government announced their fiscal plans. And the market just panned them. Nearly everybody you can imagine, economists, the IMF, the U.S. rating agencies, and the Bank of England, the U.K. government announced basically a huge fiscal stimulus plan while the Bank of England is fighting inflation and raising interest rates. Many people see that as a contradiction, and they wondered about the twin deficit problem of both the large current account deficit and a bigger budget deficit. This took sterling sharply lower, and basically it was like foreign capital strike, foreigners selling bonds and the sterling. And what ends up happening is that it posed systemic risk. And this is why the Bank of England stepped into the market and announced a bond buying program. Remember what was happening? Next month, the Bank of England had planned on selling bonds that it had bought during COVID. It was going to be aggressively unwinding them in a version of QT. Most countries that are moving towards QT see a passive rollover. That is, when the bonds mature, they just won't replace as much of them. The Bank of England was one of the few banks that talked about and was actually planning on selling the bonds. It suspended that program and announced a program to buy bonds. It says it's buying these bonds not to influence monetary policy, but to inject some stability in the markets. The markets and the Bank of England has been encouraging the idea that in response to the fiscal stimulus, they're going to have to hike rates aggressively. They don't meet until November 3rd, but the market, the swaps market, is pricing in a rate hike of 150 basis points.
Well, that would be a pretty about-face as far as their policy if they do a 150 basis point rate hike in the UK. But, Mark, we've seen the same pattern playing out really with central banks and nations all over the globe. When we saw what the ECB was forced to do by starting to hike rates when they still had a lot of economic woes, but inflation is pushing them to get on the tightening policy bandwagon. And then we saw last week what happened, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, with the Bank of Japan selling U.S. treasuries to backstop the yen and to buy some of their bonds. So we had an interesting discussion before we started recording today about, is it QE? Is it not QE? Is it just a semantics thing? And hardliners would say if the central banks are in there buying bonds to stabilize their currencies, that is quantitative easing. But you made the point that this has been going on for a long time, and it wasn't even called QE before the 2008-2009 financial crisis, and that there's times where it's really the messaging and the policy, that the combination of those two, that needs to be done better. I'd love you to expand on that point for our audience.
Sure. I think that, you know, you've got different channels in which policy had its impact. Powell talked about the tightening of financial conditions in the U.S., and he mentions that the strong dollar is one of the channels by which it takes place on. Oftentimes, the market emphasizes quantities, like money supplies, or prices. And I'm just suggesting that there's a third channel, and I think it's especially on these kind of policies, and when people talk about things that sometimes are not tangible, like R star, or the natural rate of unemployment, that what matters is the communication channel. I think we sometimes underestimate how powerful that is. So, for example, the Bank of Japan has, in the past, slowed down its bond buying, but nobody called it tapering because it didn't say it was tapering. When the Federal Reserve buys an asset and says, we're just buying this asset, not really trying to influence prices, I think that matters. And so what the Bank of England did this week, when they announced about a 65 billion sterling gilt purchase program, they said, this is not quantitative easing. We're doing this to promote stability in the capital markets, in our bond market, because there's several reports about that UK pension funds were at risk. The higher volatility, the big jump in interest rates required larger margin money to be put up collateral. And this was a huge liquidity squeeze that could have turned into a solvency problem if this would have been continued. And so the UK, the Bank of England says, this is how we're going to distinguish these bond purchases from QE. First, they're going to go to a different account. Secondly, as soon as we can, we want to sell these off. And so they try to make a distinction whether you buy it or not, that there is a clear distinction. They try to communicate that there's a distinction. And I would think that the market, again, rightly or wrongly, is believing them. And I say that because UK interest rates have fallen back. They're not back to where they were previously, but they have fallen back. Sterling got down to 103.5, I mentioned, Monday morning. And today we made highs since then, almost 112.5. So sterling almost recouped everything it had lost. UK rates on the week are still a bit higher. But if the Bank of England's intervention in the debt market was to promote or inject stability, I think at least at the first battle, they've won.
So, Mark, what does it mean if, let's say, we're at peak hawkishness for the Fed and other central banks? Does it mean that they're going to be cutting rates around the corner? Does it mean that they're simply going to pause? Does it mean less rate hikes? How could this all play out in a level-headed sense?
Sure. So, yeah, the reason I think that there's peak Fed hawkishness is a helpful concept is think about what happened when the Fed, at the end of the last meeting, the hawkish statement, the rate hike, the dot plots, the market initially, sort of, man, the market swings, you know, the pendulum swings violently sometimes, and it priced in 5.5% Fed funds peak rate in the middle of next year. Previously, it was at about 4.5% for Q1. So we go up to 5.5%. That's when I think that a lot of that volatility that Chad was mentioning, a lot of the stock market reacting, because remember, in the U.S., our indexes, Dow Jones stocks 600 in Europe, the MSCI Asia Pacific Index, all these indexes made new lows for the year. And so I think that was the peak of like how hawkish people thought the Fed could get. And now I think they correct. The market's back at 4.5% for Fed funds peak in Q1. And I think that markets just sort of correcting its overreaction.
All right, Mark, we're out of time for this segment on the radio, but everyone listening on the radio, you can listen to this full interview on our website and podcast. Just click on that Weekend Show post.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
If you're like most Americans, you're pretty much in disbelief with what's going on in the world. As we all know, global problems are having local consequences. Too many of them. And if the peanut butter really hits the fan, are you ready? Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Now's the time to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. Our food kits will ship quickly and discreetly to your door. Having food storage in your home beats government food lines hands down. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at TeamG'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Did you know that you could easily be saving up to 90% on your taxes by simply making a phone call? That's right. The Fortune 500, the globalists, all the big billionaires and millionaires, they know about the loopholes written into the law where most of them pay almost zero tax. In fact, many of them pay no tax. You even see it on the news. How are they able to do that? But the common person can. So whether you're a school teacher, a lawyer, a scientist, a millionaire, a billionaire, or whether you're just a regular blue-collar worker, everybody should learn about the legal, lawful loopholes. And we've got an organization and a group that I am so proud to be working with, American Tax Solutions. GCN has a special deal with them to get you the best rates. Here's the most important part. They save you money and then get part of the savings. This is an absolute win-win solution. You've got to give them a call at 855-907-4841 or GCNTaxCut.com. That's GCNTaxCut.com. The only way you miss out is not making the phone call. Make it now.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally, and it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're switching a little bit away from more of the macro comments that we got from Mark Chandler in the first couple segments here as we are chatting with Jayant Bhandari, private investor, also consultant to a lot of well-known larger investors in the resource space. Now, Jayant, we're going to focus on resource, more precious metals investing. A couple big themes here that we're going to talk about. The first one being the discrepancy between investing in gold versus the gold stocks. Because I've read a lot of articles about how gold has held up very well compared to the other markets, compared to most other stocks during this pullback, even though gold is down about 20% from its peak earlier this year. If you go from the beginning of the year, not down as much because of that run that it had really on the back of the start of that war in Ukraine. The problem is the stocks, they've gotten crushed with all the other stocks. You can even make the argument that some of the stocks have outperformed to the downside, unfortunately. But overall, there is a very different narrative between investing in gold versus gold stocks. Jayant, how do you separate the two, understanding that we are talking to a lot of investors that probably hold a little bit of gold and also quite a few gold stocks?
Corey, thanks for having me. I look at gold mining companies and gold as completely different things. They have, in my mind, virtually no relationship. Gold is a commodity, whereas gold mining companies are businesses. And what happens usually is that when gold price goes up, the cost of making gold often tends to go up faster, which means that the profit actually gets squeezed when gold price goes up. Now, this does not always happen, but I have often seen that happening. When gold price goes up, oil price goes up, the price of steel goes up, the cost of workers goes up, go up, and as a result, the profit gets squeezed. So you should look at these two things as completely different. You should not conflate gold mining with gold in any way whatsoever.
Jayant, I think that's such an important point for people to resonate with, because when we hear people talk or when we see people leave comments on a lot of the different forums and even some of the guests we have on, they say, well, you want to be invested against inflation, so you want to hold gold and gold stocks, or, you know, you want to be betting on the end of the U.S. dollar, so you want to be in gold and gold stocks. But really, to your point, gold is something that's been around for since the earth was formed, and it's on the elemental table, a periodic table. But when you look at the mining stocks, they are businesses, they do have margins, they are supposed to operate at a profit. I guess I'd love you to unpack it a little further for the kind of companies you look at and the kind of management teams you look at, because a lot of these companies seem to only know how to burn money, but not actually how to create value in their market cap. So how do you separate the good companies from the bad?
So, Shad, when I started working in the sector 17 years back, the Venture Exchange Index was about 2,600. Today, it's less than 600, which means that even in nominal terms, I would have lost 80% of my value had I invested in what Rick Rule calls the consolidated junior sector. In real terms, I would have lost more than 90% of my value. The biggest culprit here is actually the investors. They invest in these mining companies as if they were investing in the commodities, and they have these fancy views on what the gold price should ideally be in the near future. Some people quote $50,000 per ounce as gold price, and that's absolutely outrageous. Driven by this greed and lust, what these people do is that they oversupply the mining industry with money. And because the cost of capital gets seriously reduced because of this oversupply of money, and I know, Shad, that often people say that there's shortage of money for capital in the mining industry, but that's a completely erroneous statement. Money goes where it gets the most respect. The cost of capital for the mining industry is so low because of oversupply of money that we end up investing in unprofitable mines. I go through financial accounts of companies after companies, and I'm often shocked when I see a profit appearing in a mining company's profit and loss account, because they are habitual of making losses. You should never have invested in a lot of those projects, and because you invested in those projects, you actually contributed to oversupplying the market with those commodities, leading the commodity prices to fall. So this is just such a vicious cycle for the investors, that they oversupply the money anticipating higher commodity prices, but they're contributing to destroying the commodity pricing. So if they really believe in a certain commodity, they should just buy that commodity, and by buying that commodity, they would help increase the price of that commodity. And if they invest in businesses, they should ask for a very nice return on their investment. I would say at least 20% a year, because mining commodity pricing are so volatile, you have to make sure that you invest for a 20% profit so that your risks are covered as well, because commodity prices can fall. If you take rational approaches for when you invest in businesses, which is in mining, or when you invest in commodities, you would actually help the market be less volatile than it is. But also by oversupplying the mining companies with money, what investors do is that they turn a blind eye to the personalities of the management, and they attract a lot of bad kind of managements, people who are scammers, people who don't understand value creation. And I think that's why I think there's a higher reason for a rational approach to investing.
Giant, this brings up a whole other question of, if you just focus on gold and even to a certain extent silver, do we even need to mine more gold or more silver? Quite frankly, most gold that has been mined is above ground. Silver at least has a bit of that industrial component. But when it comes to gold, should we even be bothering mining any more gold?
Well, in a real world, I can't stop mining companies to continue mining. But what I can certainly do is to make sure I only give my money to companies that assure me that they can generate a 20% return on the money that I give them using the current gold price. Now, if I use that yardstick, most projects are unprofitable. They are non-mineable projects. So automatically, in a rational environment, most of this mining would come to an end, or gold price would rise enough to justify mining those projects. So indirectly, my answer is yes to you, but because I can't stop, turn off mining overnight, or I have no control over who mines for what, my suggestion is that people should be expecting a return on capital at least 20% per year without having fancy views on the future of gold prices.
Giant, I think that's a great spot to end this segment. Everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back with Giant Bhandari.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Cortland Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
USA Radio News.
I'm Tony Marussa reporting. President Biden at FEMA headquarters said Florida Governor Ron DeSantis requested, and he has approved, a major disaster declaration for Florida. The president said the disaster declaration will help Floridians without insurance or enough insurance.
It means the federal government will provide individual assistance of $37,900 for home repairs, another $37,900 for lost property, for everything from automobile to lost wedding rings.
The road to Fort Myers is littered with powerboats, yachts, and jet skis, including by its welcome sign, in the aftermath of Hurricane Ian, which smashed into the coastal city Wednesday as a Cat 4 storm, leaving it decimated and unrecognizable. City officials had handed out evacuation orders the day before the storm hit, but some residents stayed, believing the hurricane would hit further north, as forecasters predicted. This is USA Radio News.
Americans have the most colorful language in the world, and that vibrant language is our basis for thinking in big ways, new ways, efficient ways, and better ways. Americans have freedom of speech. The pairing of our colorful language and freedom of speech has made us the people and the nation that we are today. Imagine what it would be like not having the freedom to speak our minds, communicate our thoughts and ideas, and hear those from others. Americans have a passion for and yearn for the truth. There are those who want to destroy our freedom and right to hear the truth. The truth is under attack. GCN is under attack. I'm asking our fellow broadcasters and you to rise up and help us defend our right to free speech. Would you like to join us? Please consider visiting SaveGCN.com. Please help us bring you the truth 24 hours per day. I'm Vincent Finelli.
I'm Ben Utek. I played high school, college, and pro football, helping my team win the 2006 championship. It was an amazing day, but it can't compare to the joy I feel every day with my loving wife and three beautiful daughters. My football career ended after I suffered my fifth concussion. Did you know that over a million athletes suffer a concussion each year? That includes boys and girls, every age, every type, and level of sport. It isn't always clear that a player has had a concussion, so parents, athletes, and coaches need to learn about concussion signs and symptoms. The American Academy of Neurology recommends athletes thought to have a concussion be immediately removed from play and not returned until assessed by a healthcare professional trained in concussion. This isn't just about sports. It's about your brain. When in doubt, sit it out. Learn more at aan.com/concussion. That's aan.com/concussion. A message from the American Academy of Neurology.
Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, we are back, continuing on with the weekend edition of the KE Report, and we are continuing to chat with Jayant Bhandari. We are focusing still on the precious metals sector. We had quite the interesting conversation in the last segment, talking about if gold should even be mined and what investors should be looking for in terms of percentage returns. Jayant just finished saying that he looks at a minimum of a 20% return in his stocks from mining in the current price environment. Jayant is up next with our first question, so here we go.
Well, Jayant, I think you raise an interesting point there, because it would be easier to go through the producing companies and look for the ones with the best margins, whatever metal it is, whether it's gold or silver or copper, and look for the companies that can actually produce and still earn a profit or that 20% margin, even if metals prices pulled back some. But when you're looking at development stories, you can look at their economic studies, but as we know, most economic studies are marketing pieces, and they don't really address most of the problems those mines have when they go into production. And even further down the food chain, when you look at things like exploring companies and drill plays and prospect generators, they're not earning any revenues. The only thing they do is burn money. So how should people approach the earlier stage pre-revenue companies since they don't earn any profits?
You are 100% correct, Chad. It's very difficult to understand what would happen to these smaller companies, the non-mining companies, because, you know, they can provide you figures which might not turn out to be true figures when those projects actually go into production. So it's a very risky exercise, and that's why I pay an enormous, enormous attention to the personalities, the quality of management. They should be not just reasonably honest people. They should also be extremely, extremely value-conscious people. Those management should be constantly thinking that when they put a dollar into the ground, they should be generating a value of $1.20 for me in terms of share price. If they can't do it, they should actually stop investing. So we really need very disciplined management that is honest and extremely value conscious. And my guess is that only about 5 to 10% of CEOs meet that criteria. And even then, I'm consistently proven wrong when I think back into who I trusted and who turned out to be a money waster.
So, Jen, I'll play a little defense for some of these CEOs because, quite frankly, look, these markets can swing quite violently. And it was two and a half years ago that ounces in the ground were getting value. So these companies could justify spending money on exploration. Now, though, ounces in the ground aren't getting much value, which means spending money on exploration is not creating value for the company. How do you take these swings, understanding that, look, sometimes ounces in the ground, highly valued, sometimes they don't carry any value, but you do need to do something as a company to try to move a project forward?
Yeah, and that's where, you know, the biggest culprit is not the management, because they are there to do what investors ask them to do. The biggest culprit is the investors. A lot of people who invest in the junior mining industry are extraordinarily speculative, or I would say irrationally speculative. I talk with people and they look at companies and say, hey, I'm going to price this based on $15,000 per ounce of gold. Now, that is an absolutely outrageous and a stupid starting point. Now, there is actually gold everywhere. Even if you pick up a piece of rock from the ground randomly, there is some gold in there. So it is not that there's no gold there. It has to be economic value. So you have to be extremely cautious about ounces in the ground, because most ounces in the ground have no value. There is a massive amount of gold in every glass of water. There's gold in ocean, but you have to be concerned about the economic value of that gold in the in that water and ground, because you should be able to economically exploit it.
Giant, just one other question that comes to mind in this discussion is, are there just too many dang mining companies? Because when you look at the producers, there's a dozen majors, there's probably four dozen mid-tiers, there's another 4 to 5 dozen smaller producers, there's probably 100 to 200 development stage companies just in gold. And then in the exploration side, there's almost 1,000 explorers. So do we need to see more M&A and consolidation in the space, or are there just too many companies and some of them need to go extinct?
There are too many projects. The production of commodities should fall. When I started working in the industry, Shad, I was surprised that most brokers were pricing gold mining companies at NPV 0% and then using a target price which was 3 times the NPV, and then even to calculate NPV, they were using gold price that was 20 or 30% higher than the spot gold price. So they were their target prices were something like 5 or 6 times the discounted cash flow, which was absolutely crazy and irrational to me. And when I started working in the industry, I called up all these analysts asking them why they should be using such crazy target prices. And the response of every single of those was that that's how the market values these companies. Now, my job as an analyst is not how the market would be valuing these companies, but how the market should be valuing these companies. But that's not what analysts used to do and probably don't do even today. You know, interesting thing is to watch the performance of, let's say, copper ETF and copper price. And I'm in front of me is what trades at COPX, which is a copper ETF, with a CPR, which is copper, in the warehouse, and there is virtually 100% correlation over the last 5 years. So what you see is that even in copper companies where people are more yield conscious, there has been virtually no yield over the last 5 years. You have merely performed what copper has done in these years. So my conclusion looking at these such graphs is that people have overinvested in mining companies. They should not have done that. And because they are sort of gullible in the sense that they want management to lie to them so that they can invest their money in these companies. And I think overall what investors should do is that pull back their money, reduce their supply of cash to the companies, and companies then will be forced to be value conscious and they will be forced to invest in projects that actually generate a proper cash flow, a proper return on your investment.
So, Giant, overall, how do you view the sector? Doesn't sound like we're overly confident or enticed by a lot of these management teams, but look, stocks have been washed out. We've gotten a little rebound over the last week or so. The gold price technically broke down but has recovered. We're closing the month and the quarter and the week all at the same time. What's your assessment of the overall health of the, let's say, precious metals sector?
Okay, so Corey, I don't want to act over smart in whatever I have said. I have lost probably 60 to 70% of my invested value over the last few years. So I have lost a lot of money, but overall I have done extremely well, keeping my eyes on value rather than on greed. As it stands today, a lot of companies are extremely cheap. Even some of the garbage companies are cheap today just because there is a bear market in existence today. And in the bear market, people just sell everything. In a bull market, people buy everything. So in a bull market, everything, even the crappy companies become expensive. And in a bear market, even good companies become very cheap. And what I see in front of me are a lot of good companies that are cheap. I'm happy to invest in those companies, hoping that despite the fact that I have lost 60-70% of my money over the last few years, I should be able to make more than 300% or a lot more to make up for all the losses and then, again, make good money out of my investments.
Yeah, not a bad time right now to rebalance your portfolio because everything is cheap, but get out of those companies that just don't have the prospects, don't have the economic ounces in the ground. There's a number of qualities that you can point to for stocks that I think you should be in if you want to be in, and still a number of stocks that you probably should just be ignoring. Giant, thank you, as always, for your time. Very interesting conversation. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNloans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNloans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNloans.com. That's GCNloans.com.
In the 1800s, there were 160 spas set up in Europe to dispense fresh liquid whey. The sick would recover their health and the aged would become rejuvenated. There's only one whey protein powder on the market that can generate and surpass the results seen in the whey spas in Europe. But first, let me tell you the story of 90-year-old Mary, who was semi-bedridden and in hospice care. Mary had been consuming only a pea protein and pasteurized milk drink. Then Mary was put on to Green Meadow Whey mixed with raw milk. She was given 2 to 3 whey drinks per day. On the very first day, Mary was up and came into the kitchen and made chicken soup. She was on her feet for many hours. 3 days later, Mary had gained 2.5 pounds of healthy weight. Green Meadow Whey is health giving to both young and old. Green Meadow Whey is guaranteed to make you feel better, stronger, reduce your inflammation, and eliminate virtually all toxins from your body without feeling sick. To order, go to bestwayprotein.net. That's bestwayprotein.net. Or call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325.
Who listens to radio at night? EMTs, truck drivers, law enforcement, and many other hardworking people just like you, buying products and services from companies just like yours. Many companies owe their success to radio. It's the engaging medium Call 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally, and it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Tehebo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We're wrapping up the weekend edition with a replay from a daily editorial that was posted back on Tuesday. I'm replaying this one because we were joined by Brent Cook. It had been a number of months since we had Brent last on the show, so it was a good time to catch back up with Brent and just get more of a sense of where he sees this market set up. This, again, was posted on Tuesday. I hope you all enjoy. Hey, everyone. Welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Happy to report that we are chatting with Brent Cook, independent economic geologist, also works with Joe Mazumdar over at Exploration Insights. That's a newsletter that we will link to below. We're a big fan of Joe and Brent's work over at Exploration Insights. Now, Brent, it's been a little while since we last had you on the show, and no point beating around the bush here. Other than the market is continuing to fade, it's a tough market for exploration companies, developers, even the producers across the board. Metals are having a tough go and the stocks continue to drift lower. I want to first get a historical reference from you here, Brent, because there's a lot of people saying this is kind of like the crash or the meltdown when it was happening back in 2012, 2013 time frame. Then other people are even going further back. There's even some comparisons to the 70s. Brent, broadly, how are you viewing this market? What other times have we seen a market, especially for the metals, as bad as it is now?
Right. Well, thanks for having me on, Corey. I appreciate it. It's been, seems you only call me when it's really ugly out there. Yeah, it's sort of like the, you know, 2013, 15, that era. But more to me, just the valuations and the general disdain for this whole sector reminds me more of 97, 98, 99, when the resource sector was just unloved, unrecognized, unappreciated. Whilst the difference being that at that point, the dot-com bubble was soaking up all the money. Right now, given the global economic circumstances with probably stagflation, recessions, and the geopolitical situation, everything's looking rather dour. So this is ugly. I don't see it getting better for a while.
Well, Brent, it's interesting because even though we've had bad cycles before, in this particular one, the valuations of some of the companies that have banked success, where they've actually gone out and developed, let's say, a million-ounce, 2 million-ounce, 3 million-ounce deposit, there's a few dozen of these companies, and some of them are actually trading for less market cap than some of the exploration plays and the grassroots drill plays. And it seems like even if they go out and do massive drill programs, some of them have drilled up 50,000, 80,000 meters of drill core and put out even further results, and it doesn't seem to be moving the market in any way. Do you think that the end game for some of these is more consolidation in the space? Do you think we'll see some M&A where some of the big boys come in and pick up some of these projects, or would this be a sector that you would just stay away from for the immediate term?
I'm making a list, checking it twice, of projects and companies that I think are real valuable. I'm not really buying anything now because I think it gets much worse. I think, you know, we're tied to the major markets now, and they're headed south. And when they're headed south, no one's going to buy a junior exploration company or a development store or even a mining company. So we're all headed south. That's, you know, my personal opinion. And the problem, you're right, when companies are putting out news and drill holes, it's very, very rare that they go up on the news, regardless of how good it is. And in terms of companies with ounces or pounds in the ground, all that tells you when they put out a pre-feasibility or a bunch of drill holes is, geez, they're going to need more money going down the road here. So it's, again, it's people are selling on that sort of news based on, one, the sector sucks, the market sucks, and they're burning through money, and there's not much hope of them getting more down the road, at least at a reasonable price. So I think that's kind of where we're sitting right now. And I remember back in 98, 99, you could buy solid exploration companies with 10, 12, 15 million bucks in the bank for 70% of the cash in the bank. And I think we're going to get there.
For some stocks, we're already there. They are trading for cash in the bank. Brent, one argument I keep on hearing from companies is that why would we keep on exploring when we're not getting any value for those ounces? We should go out and further acquire companies that have ounces in the ground. What do you think actually moves the needle in terms of ounces in the ground, though? Because, quite frankly, a million-ounce resource, it got a lot of attention 10, 15 years ago. Now it seems like every company has somewhere around a million ounces.
Yeah. The problem with most of those million ounces is they're pretty marginal. It is really difficult to find an economic, you know, high-margin deposit in gold or silver or copper, et cetera. And that's what's being realized now as well. That's why we're not seeing near as much M&A activity as people expect, is that these major companies, they go through the data in detail, and most of your economic assessment reports, preliminary economic assessment or pre-feasibilities, and even feasibilities, are over-optimistic. And we see that with ones that are getting built, and it's costing more, the grades aren't there, the resources not accurate, that sort of thing. And that's another reason we're not seeing a lot of M&A, is it's just that given what a pre-fees says a net present value and IRR are, is not always legitimate when a real company goes through it. They tear it apart, and it's usually not as good as that. So that's another reason, I think.
Well, Brent, you've spent your career going on site visits and going out to see these projects, and you usually have made the point in the past that there's all kinds of other information that you glean when you go out on site and realize, hey, this looked good on paper, but ... now that I see this, and that's the same thing that the major companies are saying. Could you maybe speak to that for investors that, you know, view everything through the lens of a corporate presentation or press releases, how important it is, has been in your career to go out on site and actually see the project?
Well, it's been critical. I think pre-COVID, Joe and I visited 33 projects a year in the previous year. Joe's going to one or two projects a month now, And it's really key. Not only do you get to, you know, meet the management and the people actually doing the work and see how well they're doing the work and how focused they are and how it all works together, but you see issues that you don't see in these corporate presentations, which are really just selling documents, right? So, I mean, I remember times going to Columbia, for instance. Nice sounding deposit. But you get there and it's like, dang, there's a beautiful white Catholic church on top of the hill they want that's going to have to go away. Or there's instances where this mineralization's in the bottom of a valley that floods every wet season. So they cannot build an open pit mine down there. I mean, there's dozens and dozens of instances where I've gone to a project and seen something that tweaks me that says this is not going to work. And vice versa, there's projects I've been to that really stand out and look like this is really going to work. So it's critical, and particularly in the earlier stage projects, which is what Joe focuses on, and so do I.
Brent, are there any jurisdictions that you are favorable towards right now? Simply because, look, nothing's really getting all that much value, but out of anywhere, I've noticed that Northern Canada, even in Alaska, there's been the odd stock that's bucking the trend. To me, that's not the best, simply because there's so much money that needs to be spent up north, but there are some good drill results to be had. Any jurisdictions that you like, or at least are paying a bit more attention to right now?
Well, I think Nevada is always good. I think Utah's good. I think Arizona, depending on if it's BLM, forest, or private land, then you've always got to take into consideration water. Is there water? Is there not water? That sort of thing. Mexico has gotten worse. Walking down into South America, Argentina's gotten better. Bolivia has gotten better. The rest have gotten worse. Brazil I like a lot. I think still West African countries are fair. Scandinavia, Australia. That pretty much covers what I can think of right now in the world.
Okay, that wraps up the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope you all enjoyed this weekend show. And as always, please go back to our website or podcast and go through all of our daily editorials. As always, keep in touch with Shad and I through email, either fleck@kereport.com or shad@kereport.com. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.
Hey trader, listen up. The markets have changed. Have you changed your trading strategies? Vantage Point can help you conquer volatility. Learn to trade with artificial intelligence. Text the word money to 813-813 and discover how to predict stock market trends 1 to 3 days in advance with up to 87.4% proven accuracy. No matter which way the market moves, Vantage Point's patented AI can give you a massive edge. Text money to 813-813 to get what you need to stay ahead of markets and find your best entries and exits. Text the word money to 813-813.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance. By texting, you agree to the terms available at VantagePointSoftware.com/terms and consent to receive calls and texts using automated technology about offers or info by or on behalf of VantagePoint. Your consent is not a condition to purchase and can be revoked at any time. Message and data rates may apply.
Text money to 813-813.
I'm about to give you a life-changing URL that if you will simply visit it and give these tax consultants a call, it will change your life. Whether you're a blue-collar worker or whether you're a school teacher or whether you're a scientist or whether you're a millionaire, almost no one out there is taking advantage of legal, lawful tax loopholes. Go to GCNTaxCut.com. It takes you right to American Tax Solutions, and they will give you an amazing preview of what they can do for you. GCNTaxCut.com, GCNTaxCut.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.